Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Glass Lewis Proxy Talk conference call. Before we get started, I'd like to remind everyone that our conference call series, and this call in particular, should not be considered a solicitation of proxies by Glass Lewis & Co. Glass Lewis has not sought permission to do so from the Securities and Exchange Commission, nor will it. This call is for information purposes only, and should not be construed as providing investment advice. In addition, Glass Lewis makes no representation or warranty regarding the accuracy, completeness, or reliability of any statement, information, opinion, or view presented by its guest speakers. As a reminder, this call is recorded and will be available on the Glass Lewis website. My name is Andrew Geblin, and I'm the Senior Director of Research at Glass Lewis. Today we'll be discussing the upcoming annual meeting of Valley. This is an important meeting for Valley following a year of an environmental disaster in which the Samarco Dam burst and caused significant damage to the local community but also to the company's results, and leading into a year where the company is proposing to list on the Novo Mercado, which would ostensibly improve governance standards at the company. So we're here today with candidates for the election of directors of Valley, who will be proposed for positions that are reserved specifically for minority shareholders and preferred shareholders. We're first going to hear from the candidates for the board and two of the funds that have proposed them, and then we're going to hear a bit from Mauro Rodriguez da Cunha, representing AMEC, the Brazilian Investor Association, on why this meeting is so important and on general developments in Brazil going forward. We're here today to talk about the upcoming meeting for Val, and I'm joined by some candidates for the board of directors representing both minority shareholders and preferred shareholders. I would like to first just ask everyone to briefly introduce themselves before we get into the content of this call. So if I could ask Sandra to start.
Thank you so much, Andrew. This is Sandra Guerra. I'm board director of two Brazilian companies, Copel and Vix Logistics, and also for a board director at a not-for-profit international organization, GRI, Global Reporting Initiative. I'm a founding partner of Better Governance.
Great, thank you. And maybe we could move to Isabella.
Hi, this is Isabella Saboia. I currently serve as a board member, independent board member in a listed company in Brazil. I'm also a board member of IBGC and a fiscal council member in another Brazilian listed company, Mills.
Thank you, Isabella. Moving on to Peter.
Hi there. I am Peter Taylor. I'm director and head of Brazilian equities for Aberdeen Asset Management, based in Sao Paulo, and we are nominating Sandra and Isabella as the candidates to be independent directors elected respectively by the minority preferred shareholders and the minority ordinary shareholders of Valley.
Thank you, Peter. Now, if I could ask Marcelo.
Hello. First of all, thank you, Glass Lewis, Andrew, Eva, and Francisca for the openness to opportunity and share these perspectives of Valley. I'm a lawyer in Brazil, and I have been acting as a board member in Brazilian listed companies such as Usiminas, where I was chairman from 2015 to 2016, AES Eletropaulo, Batistela, Bradespar, Celesc, Temig, Eletrobras, Eternity, and Tecnisa. I'm currently deputy director at Valley. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcelo. Bruno?
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Andrew, for the call and for Glass Lewis to organize a proxy talk ahead of the Valley AGM. I'm Bruno Vesti. I'm based in New York. I'm the founder and managing director of Kids All Strategy, which is a boutique ESG consultancy providing sustainability and governance solutions to investors and emerging markets company. I previously worked as the head of Latin America at Hermes EOS Investment based in the UK, also heading the mining and metals sector.
Thank you, Bruno. And Carlos.
My name is Carlos Taveiros from Geração Futuro, São Paulo. And we are indicating Mr. Marcelo Gasparino and Mr. Bruno for the positions on Vale.
Great. Well, we are delighted to have all of you with us today. And we're hoping to talk about the election of directors proposals for which some of you are nominated directly at the upcoming meeting of Vale. And I would like to just get your perspectives on what your plans are for Val and your thoughts are on the election in general. As you know, there are some difficulties relating to the shareholder voting options on individual candidates, which we've covered in our Glass Lewis proxy season preview for Brazil, and we will hear more about that later. But first, I would like to hear more about why you have accepted a nomination to the board of Vale, or for Peter and Carlos, why you have decided to propose your own candidates. I'm interested in hearing just a little bit more about what perspective you'll bring to the board, whether you have any particular projects or plans in mind, and what you think you will offer to minority shareholders or preferred shareholders in Val. So since we ended with Bruno, maybe we could start with you, and I could just ask for some of your thoughts on and some background on your nomination.
Of course. Thanks, Andrew. So in terms of background to my nomination, I was contacted by Geração Futuro to represent ordinary minority shareholders to the board of Vale. I gladly accepted, as I believe I could bring to the board various aspects from my experience and projects I worked on in the last couple of years. As I previously mentioned in my brief intro, I used to head Latin America for Hermes EOS, which is a corporate governance team within Hermes Investment based in the UK, where I was supervising all the sustainability-related engagement and governance activity for Latin America, in particular in Brazil. Within that role, I used to head the mining and metals sector and oversaw all our activities in terms of engagement with mining companies around the world and Vale included. So I've been covering the company for quite a few years now, from both a purely financial and strategic perspective, but also from a sustainability and governance point of view as well. Including having done some site visits to various of Vale's operations and engaged with the company's chairman, board members, CEO, CFO, and head of sustainability at the time to help the company improve its practices in these areas. I also used to represent Hermes EOS on the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative, EITI, which is an international organization initiative led by investors to help and to encourage mining companies to further disclose data and information on their operations. So from that angle, I hope to bring to the board my experience of working within fund management, how and my experience as a minority investor at the time at the company, which I believe should help me bring to the board better understanding of the concerns and demands of not only Brazilian investors, but also international investors. I recently moved to New York and very much based my life, I would say, the moment between Brazil, São Paulo, Brazil, London, and New York, which also enabled me to meet with minority investors going forward in a relatively easy manner. I've worked with Brazil for quite a few years now, having participated in various governance projects, working for companies, with companies, as well as with investors and with public policy bodies. So I hope to bring to the well-rounded, I'd say, take on the board with understanding of the various parties, the various drivers, to help the company move forward positively within the transition it's currently going through in terms of governance, as well as in terms of sustainability management following the San Marco dam disaster, and helping the rebuild quite literally its policies, practices, and other sites. Structures to not only avoid these sort of incidents going forward, but also very much to ensure that the company is prepared to manage this risk positively going forward, as well as to capitalize on opportunities that sustainability will present for them.
Great. Thank you, Bruno, for those introductory remarks. Maybe I can turn it over to your counterpart, Marcelo, who is also nominated by the same fund, to give an introduction to his position. Marcelo?
Hello, Andrew, thank you. We invite to Geração Futuro to listen to the conversation, but I have led a trend that was later acknowledged by the market and by the regulator as something positive, that minority shareholders should be active in the companies that they invest, either directly or through those in the nominee that would act on their behalf and as a board member with strict observance of corporate governance and concepts and principles. Since 2015, along with shareholder Geração Futuro, we have begun studies and contacts to enable the election of an independent member at the Vale Board of Directors in order to the company to recognize this merit of the shareholders' initiative and to view in the market. Vale's Board of Directors accepted my appointment as the replacement of an independent director that was vacant, a mandate that I was took over in May of 2016. Since then, I have been preparing to be an independent member of Vale's Board of Directors. I think it's important to recognize the brilliant work done by CEO Murilo Ferreira in recent years. He delivered the largest investment cycle in the company's history. He managed the San Marco disaster and faced and overcame the acute financial crisis that Vale experienced in 2016. The choice for me, the choice of Fabio Schwartzman, a corporate veteran, as the new CEO indicates that Vale will be governed by market forces and not by the political sign. Particularly, I believe that it's significant untapped value potential to the shepherd by Vale, particularly in the next years when the mining sector should experience a new commodity rebound through the end of decade. And for the independent director indicated by Geração Futuro El Par, we believe in three priorities for a transformation of Vale. First, attack and close the productive gap in operations. Second, change organization structure, talent and culture to effectively implement a performance-oriented organization. And three, repriorize the compelling growth strategy. To finish this first participation, in addition to these three priorities, there is one fundamental and immediate factor to be mastered by the new CEO and the new board of directors. That is to improve the relationships with Vale's stakeholders. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marcelo. Carlos, as the nominating fund, I wonder if you have any additional comments you'd like to add.
No, I don't have any additional comments. The reasons why we are indicating Marcelo and Bruno are all expressed on the letter we sent to you. And I think I just act here as a listener, and I think we should listen to the candidates.
In that case, let's move on to Sandra Guerra. Sandra?
Thank you, Andrew, for this opportunity. Well, you asked us why we accept this opportunity of being a candidate for the Board of Directors of Vale. I believe that we are facing here a historical moment, not only for Vale, but for Brazil, due to the importance of Vale in the marketplace. So this path that is established to make Vale a true corporation, as already announced, is quite an important movement. And I think this will require in the board of directors of the company a deep understanding and knowledge on corporate governance, because this path to true corporation should be firmly rooted in strong corporate governance for sure. And that's why I thought that I could be of value for the board's Vale, considering my almost 22 years dedicated to corporate governance, being the co-founder of the Brazilian Institute of Corporate Governance. Sometimes I used to say that governance is my middle name because of all this time dedicated to the topic. I also think that because Vale is such an international company, it requires a very good understanding of the international scene, particularly in the corporate governance arena. So I believe that my two terms at the board of the International Corporate Governance Network, which is a governance organization geared to investors and the members of ICGN, represents $26 trillion in assets. This experience that I had for 5 years was very interesting for me to understand the perspective of investors when it comes to corporate governance. So I think I can add value in this perspective of understanding the approach of investors. And I like to say this new approach of investors of engaging with companies in regards to corporate governance. Also, I believe that because of the core business of the company, of course, is mining, I would be of help in helping the board to improve its understanding of the sustainability aspects involved with the company operations. I'm speaking today from Amsterdam, where I am participating in the my first board meeting at the Global Reporting Initiative, which you are familiar with, the standards on corporate reporting on environmental and social aspects. So I think that this experience can add value to the board of directors of Vale. And also very important is because of the what we have witnessed recently in Brazil, to check and to confirm which is the risk model that the company is adopting, and more importantly, how this model is being applied, how the risks are being assessed, to be sure that we have a very robust model of risk management in the company. To do all that, and of course, I'm not talking about Vale strategy. I mean, it's important to understand from now on when it may be Vale is entering in a phase that, you know, cash generation will become different from the past. It will be the board should be focused on a very deep drop on strategy and capital allocation, of course, considering the discipline to do so. But to do all this, I think it's quite important to other aspects as a board director. First is independence. And I'm not talking about the technical independence. I'm talking in mind independence. It's very important that a board director is able to speak up his or her mind in a way to contribute to the company. And this is only possible if this director has the time availability to dedicate to the company. So I think this is quite important that you have both independence and time availability to engage and to participate in the discussions of the company. So I'm pretty much looking forward to have the opportunity to contribute to boards of Vale.
Thank you very much, Sandra. With that, I would ask the same question of Isabella.
Hi, thank you, Andrew, for this opportunity to present myself for the board of Vale. I think in light of Vale's recent proposal named Roadmap to a True Corporation, which can be a historical moment to the company, and because of the size of the company and the importance of the company, it's very important to Brazilian market cap. I believe the company's board needs keen corporate governance experts to steer and support key steps during the period of transition. I think Vale's proposal emphasizes the role of independent directors in the board, as Sandra said. Well, after 25 years working in the Brazilian capital markets, I believe I can bring to Vale's board the point of view of an institutional investor focusing on capital allocation and corporate governance improvements, an area which I believe I have a valuable experience. I began my career as a sell-side analyst and went on to become a partner with two value-driven corporate governance fund managers, Investidor Profissional and Jardim Botânico Investimentos. I served as board members in a couple of listed companies when I was a partner in Investidor Profissional, and right now I serve on the board of other listed companies. I also served as a special assistant to the chairman of CVM, our local SEC, and I work on the reform of the corporate law and the launching of the Novo Mercado. And most recently, I was the lead writer for the Brazilian Stewardship Code, launched in October 2016, which outlines the responsibilities of institutional investors in the companies they own in their portfolios. For obvious reasons, sustainability is key issue for Vale, And I just had a very intense experience last year on an audit and risk committees implementing a full risk assessment revision in the companies I served as a board member. In addition to the corporate governance and sustainability key issues, like Sandra said, the company probably now will face a different situation than it had in the past in terms of they had to cut costs and they had a very hard period of selling assets, cost cutting, and now they probably facing a shift to a strong cash generator again. And as an analyst and investor, I know capital allocation decisions will be crucial now to determine how much value could be added to stakeholders during the next stage.
And actually, now I would like to just offer Peter the opportunity to see if he has any other comments following Isabella and Sandra.
Thank you, Andrew. To echo Isabella's comment that this is truly a historic moment in the evolution of one of Brazil's highest profile companies, the success of the new governance structure is premised upon an enhanced role for strong, credible, independent directors who will contribute to the board's leadership of Vale in the years ahead. In other words, the burden is on us as minority investors to make it work by nominating the strongest and most credible independent directors possible. In particular, these independent directors will need to shield the company from undue external influences during and after the transition to a broadly held or so-called true corporation, as they term it in Brazil. It is important to emphasize that independent here means independent not only from the management, not only the controlling shareholders, but even from us as minority shareholders nominating them. And I'd like to underline emphatically that Sandra and Isabella are not Aberdeen directors in any sense at all, apart from the fact that we have the pleasure of nominating them. I've personally known Sandra and Isabella for 17 years from when I first worked on Brazilian corporate governance. So when we were looking for independent director candidates for the board of Vale, they were both very natural choices. I won't rehash all of what they've said about their very impressive CVs in this area, except a couple of things that really stood out to me. One is the fact that Sandra was until very recently the chairman of the Brazilian Institute of Corporate Governance. As Isabella, apart from the fact that she literally wrote the stewardship code here last year, that couple of years of experience she had outside of the private sector, where she works with the regulator on the creation of the Novo Mercado and on the reforms to the corporate law, that was something that I thought was a very sort of very interesting and if you like, a unique selling point. So we're very pleased to be able to nominate them both.
Thank you, Peter. Well, we'll have more of an opportunity to expand on some of those comments shortly. But as Sandra mentioned, there is definitely an interest in this idea of technical independence as well as independence of mind. So I'd like to turn it back to a couple of questions that I hope should be able to be answered fairly briefly, posed to each of the candidates directly themselves. And that's simply the following two questions. One is about independence and one is about time commitment. So firstly, I'd like to ask each candidate if they have any pre-existing relationships to Vale, its directors, officers, or auditors of which shareholders should be aware when considering your independence. And do you have any other external commitments, including executive roles or directorships that are current that shareholders should be aware of when making their decisions? So with that, I might ask you to go in the same order, just starting with Bruno, if I could.
Of course, again. In terms of independence, I'm completely independent from both the company and the Gerações Futuro nominated me. Never had a working relationship with either the employed either or our director position at either the company or the fund. In terms of external commitment, I'm not currently sitting on any board of companies. I'm on the board of a social enterprise in London, which is a diplomatic consultancy. And besides, of course, my my own advisory firm.
Okay.
So currently, I've quite a lot of time.
Thank you, Bruno. Marcelo.
Yes, my answer is no. I am currently an independent deputy member of the board of directors of Vale, and then I am too much okay with the law and with the conscience. But I was a member of the law firm that provided legal service to Vale 11 years ago in a specific subject in the tax area. About this, I consider myself independent, and legally this fact does not affect my independence. The object of the service was provided to other 10 large companies in Brazil. Then, for me, the independence is one of the most important things, and to be an independent candidate in a separate election by preferred shareholders is a condition to be independent already.
All right, thank you, Marcelo. And I could turn it over to Sandra.
I consider myself technically independent as well as independent from the point of view of subjective, the mind-independent approach. As I said in the beginning, I am at the board of Copel in Paraná, a listed company, Vix Logística, which is based in Espírito Santo. It's a not listed company, and in the board of Global Reporting Initiative. I've been a consultant in corporate governance, particularly focused on board issues since 2005. And I have never rendered services to Vale's board or to Vale's governance or to Vale's company in any case. In regard to my independence related to the controlling or minority shareholders, I think that my history speaks for myself. I've been nominated to Copel's Vale by BNDES. I've been elected to Vix Logística by IFC, International Finance Corporation, and I've been nominated now by Aberdeen. So I like to have these various shareholders, institutional investors that are backing me and proposing me to become a board director in all these companies. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandra. Isabella, same question.
Well, I was an investor in Vale from 2009 until 2015, when I was a partner in Jardim Botânico. I was actually responsible for analyzing and following the investment. And it was a period in which investors suffered because the company had, undue external influences and were kept asking when Vale would, take some corporate governance practices to shield themselves from that, and didn't have any answer. But then last year, I also served a few months in Bradespa Fiscal Council. I was appointed by minority shareholders there, but it was only enough to attend two meetings, and the last one was actually to pass on to my alternate. I had to leave because of the work overload last year, which besides the position I mentioned, included also a very intense board of directors membership in BR Malls, where I was also indicated by minority shareholders. This is the leading shopping center listed company, and I also led the audit and risk committee there until last month. So was a very time-consuming. And in the meetings in Bradespa, the one that I really participated with was the first one. All the questions was, you know, when are you guys are going to handle the shareholders agreement and how this is, you're going to use that to improve corporate governance. Didn't have any answer by that because Bradespa was fiscal council was sort of far away from the I would say the people who really decides, but I asked already, so I think I'll be truly independent. I was always nominated by minority shareholders.
Great. Well, so we've covered some basic information about all of the candidates, which I really appreciate. And I'd just like to know if there is any other source of information. As Carlos mentioned earlier, they forwarded a letter to Glass Lewis, which we will make available to all of our clients. But I'd like to hear from Aberdeen and from the Geração Futuro, if there's anywhere else that listening shareholders should look for information.
Yeah, well, one place, this is Peter here, one place that shareholders can find a lot of information is Vale's own website, and that's obviously for both sets of candidates. If you look under a heading called GSM, that's General Shareholders Meeting, they have a lot of information there about the nomination of both sets of candidates, and that indeed includes the CVs of all four candidates. In terms of Aberdeen itself, we've just issued a press release which will be on our own Brazilian website, and we will certainly forward that to you, Andrew, so that you can have it available to your clients.
Thank you. Great. And Carlos or Marcelo, if either of you want to comment?
Yes, about the indications from Geração Futuro, all the informations that the shareholders consider necessary are all maybe disposed on Geração Futuro management, and the shareholders maybe feel free to call to Geração Futuro, and Geração Futuro will provide all the information they consider necessary.
As we know in Brazil, when a nominee is nominated for a board position representing a minority shareholder or a preferred shareholder, there may be other shareholders who are backing the candidates, sometimes publicly and sometimes not. So I just want to bring as much information to light as possible for our listeners. So I would just ask again, Geração Futuro, are there any other shareholders who you would name who are publicly backing the nominees or who could provide further information?
I understand. You would like to know if there is another shareholders provide support for the indication. Yes, there is. I can say the names of Banco Clásico, Alaska Asset Management, Adula Consultancy Group, some many Brazilian individual investors, and some non-resident investment funds that prefer not to be disclosed.
Absolutely, and we understand that not everyone is able to disclose their position immediately, but thank you for that. So, Peter, can I ask if there was anything on that point from your side?
Well, Isabella or Sandra may have something to add on this, but at this point we're talking to a lot of domestic and international institutions, and we are quite optimistic that that a lot of them will be supporting Sandra and Isabella, though it's a little bit early for any of them to have gone public since this has all come up at fairly short notice, as you know.
Absolutely. Sandra or Isabella? Okay. Yes.
Yeah. This is Isabella. I can add the JGP. JGP is a very large and well-known asset manager in Brazil, and they are publicly backing our candidacy also. I don't know if Sandra wants to add anything. There are other locals, but not at this point to be disclosed, but JGP agrees to be disclosed and it's a leading investor in Vale Preferred Shares.
Well, I've been, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. As Isabella has been talking about local investors, I'll be focusing on international investors. I have been, of course, because of my previous experience with International Corporate Governance Network, I have a very big, a very large network with institutional international investors, and I have been in contact with many of them, but I didn't ask them permission to disclose anything. So what I can say is that I have been very well received by them when they learned that I'm a candidate to the Vale's board, because they know me for so many years. So I'm very excited about that, but as I didn't ask permission, I will not disclose their names.
Absolutely understood, and I know it's a sensitive question. I just want to put everything on the table again for our listeners that is available. Well, it's important to cover all of the logistics and the kind of important basic background information of each candidate, but I would like to talk a little bit more about some of the plans and expertise that you brought up earlier. In particular, as Sandra mentioned, understanding of sustainability issues at board level, I was curious to hear whether the candidates had any particular position on how you would approach the issue of risk oversight, particularly with regard to environmental or social risk, which we can see had a huge impact on Vale in recent history. So maybe I'll turn that over to Sandra and Isabella first, if either of you want to comment on that further.
Okay. So as I was saying before, and it's very fortunate that I'm speaking from Amsterdam, where I am participating on Global Reporting Initiative Board, and considering Vale activity is key and the approach that the company's approach to sustainability. And I would say that it's an interesting equation that we have to focus on, which is risk and sustainability. I'm quite confident and sure that sustainability approach is a value creation instrument for companies. But when you do not have the correct approach to it, you may consider being in the way to destroy value. And it seems that that was what we witnessed recently in Brazil in the Samarco case. So a firm approach on how company is managing risks and how facing and understanding all the aspects involved with sustainability is absolutely crucial. The environmental aspects involved in Vale's operation are of great importance. So I think that it's quite important that the board dedicated enough time to understand all the aspects involved, the model used by the company, and also how you know, the risks are currently being assessed. The process of assessing risk internally is quite as important as the model adopted, because if you have, for instance, the risk owner assessing the risk, it may be the case that some bias come into place, and then you will not have the proper assessment of the risk. So I think that not only the model, but also the way the model has been applied, the process of assessing risk is something that the board should take attention and put some effort on, you know, being sure that it's very robust the model and the approach to sustainability as well.
Thank you. Isabella, did you have anything to add, or are you happy with that?
Yes. Just at the risk of trying to give a short answer for a very complex issue, I would like to understand, you know, how the company approached risk assessment and risk management before the disaster, and especially what changed after it. I will check how the board and eventually a risk committee approached the three different kinds of risk, you know, avoidable risks, strategic risk, and external risks. There is probably a valuable and painful lesson learned from the episode, and I would like to understand what that lesson was and how it changed the company's approach to risk. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I'll turn it over to either Bruno or Marcelo, if you'd like to comment on that.
What Isabella said, there's a risk to simplify a very complicated issue here, but I think that there are various aspects to be considered and to be reviewed, both on the governance level and the governance of sustainability risk and opportunities, and ensuring that there are the right structures and frameworks from the board down to the operational level and with the right structure and system to monitor and to propose the light of those issues, both within the company's operations, but also within the company's joint ventures, partner, and throughout its supply chain, as was the case of San Marco, which was a joint venture, to ensure the proper proper governance system, and of a sudden implemented. But also to ensure that the board overall has proper knowledge, understanding, and I would say the right tools and the right power at its disposal to look at all the key issues, the key environmental and social issues affecting the company, maybe in its response to climate change and move to a low carbon economy, its potential impact on biodiversity, water intensity, pollution with you know, the tailing risk and various chemical residues that do occur in the mining process, as well as in the more social side, but having a look at how the company is managing bribery and corruption risk, political risk, as well as, of course, health and safety throughout its operation, as well as community relations throughout its Brazilian and international operation, as well as, of course, all the relation they have with indigenous people and the work that the company has been doing throughout its Brazilian sites. So I think there's quite a lot of work to be done within the company. The company has improved significantly, but I think it's again a very exciting time, I think, for Vale at on various level, and you know, if one could compare the San Marco disaster and its management to, let's say, the BP disaster, sadly, he often takes such an event for companies to react and to revamp significantly their practices and policies on such issues. And now BP, I would say, as a particularly strong and market leading way of managing its risk, and Vale has so far given signs and hopes that it is indeed looking at all those issues, and that very much hope to be able to help in that process to ensure that, as Sandra said earlier as well, to not only manage the risk, but to very much capitalize on all the opportunities that sustainability represent for the company by integrating all those aspects within the core of the company strategy and oversight system.
Thank you. Marcelo, anything to add?
Yes, this is a very good question, Andrew. Thank you. I think Valve should be aware of the challenges ahead, such as strive for innovation and productivity, raise the value of the company in general, and for the shareholders be able to operate in a good ecosystem, support professional teams within the company to perform their activities in a healthier and more inclusive manner. Have the clear view of the perspectives to be shared between the sector and the governments, as well as to require the social permission to operate. Communities should be convinced that Vale is doing it right, and therefore the activity is seen productive and I think creating jobs as opposed to being considered dangerous and harmful or even reckless. As a lawyer, I am very attuned to the importance of reducing risks. At Usiminas, the chairman of the board of the chairman of the board is responsible for the company's internal audit, and I am mandated. We implement a risk management model that I met in an electric power company that has electric power, namely dams. Unfortunately, it's the same year after the disaster of Samarco. Looking the profitability of risk and environmental issues, we will increase the probability of increases shareholder value. As board member, I will support relevant and appropriate risk management governance, and we will maximize the effective management of the company's business. These rules, I think, will ensure that Vale's measures assess the risks of each project that the company is involved. I think there is a way to do it, making it right in Samarco, revising internal procedures, adopting and monitoring strong, bold and robust governance in order to perform growth of credibility, social responsibility, ethical behavior, and as a result of them, growth of the value of the company and return to shareholders, societies, governments, to the market. Profitability and more comfortable levels should be the natural result of this a little mention.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your thoughts on all of that. Now, I'm conscious of time, so I think I would like to just pose one more very broad question to each of the candidates, as I'd like to reserve a little bit of time to talk about the voting logistics before we wrap up. For any other candidates, I'd like to ask, do you have any plans with regard to your directorship at Vale if elected? Or is there anything else that you would like to highlight about the current situation of Vale, including its listing or proposed listing on the Novo Mercado? Maybe I could turn it back to you, Marcelo, to kick off.
If I understood, you said something about the proposal to the new market, Novo Mercado. For me, the Novo Mercado is the highest level of corporate governance by BMF Bovespa. I have experience proposing and defending corporate governance changes as a board member of other companies in Brazil. This should give a strong signal to investors, the market, and to the world that political influence will not be playing a major role in the company anymore. And it means, for me, a lot of when you look at the company retrospectively. I have achieved participant on the discussion in two approved conversions of preferred shares in common shares in 2017 without negative goodwill, and in the specific case of AES Eletropaulo, within migration from the level 2 of corporate governance to the Novo Mercado. This fact give the strong experience in this manner. In this case, the final word will be the for the shareholders in an extraordinary general meeting. As I am a director and deputy director, I'm not going to express my opinion on the Vale's transaction. But since the opinion of the shareholders supporting my candidates is public, it is an opportunity to inform to the other shareholders that in their view, the view of these shareholders, by concept and in view of the risk of selling a precedent for the Brazilian stock market, they are against the dilution of preferred shareholders.
Thank you, Marcelo. And Bruno, again, did you have any comments on the proposed Novo Mercado listing or any other thing that you would like to highlight before we move on?
So, I think, again, that there's quite a lot of challenges and opportunities linked to the company entering the Novo Mercado. But, again, I think there's, you know, very much as we discussed, the very style of independence, between de facto independence and independence of mind. I think that sort of similar debate applies to the Novo Mercado overall and to the type and level of practices that any company puts in place, in the sense that the requirements of Novo Mercado are, as you know, being revised and improved. However, I think it's always important to look beyond that aspect and beyond simple requirements to also encourage the company to not only meet those requirements, of course, but to also think more deeply as to why what are those requirements are there and what global practices are recommended both within the mining industry globally, but also within global leading the listed corporations. The main thing I think that will be important, I guess, is helping the company transition very much to this new level of governance and behavior, which again not only means that the company has to, you know, tick a few boxes based on requirements, but to very much review and transform itself culturally from the board from the board down, I would say. So there's again quite a lot of work to be done by the board at the company, but I think all the signs are there, and I'm very very hopeful that Vale will implement them successfully with the help of the board, of course.
Okay, thank you, Bruno. And I might just pass it back to Isabella now, if you have any closing comments, again, on the proposed listing on the Novo Mercado or any other aspects of Vale that you haven't had a chance to comment on yet.
Hi, thank you. As I understood, the proposal objective is the unification of all classes of shares and eventual migration to, you know, Novo Mercado special listing. In 2002, when I was in CVM, Bovespa was regulated by CVM, so I had the opportunity to take part in the launching of the Novo Mercado. So I believe it's really a higher level of corporate governance. I think the terms of the transition are up for shareholders to decide, but I think the best interest of the company should be the guideline. You guys are talking about being independent in the board, and I think this is important because as an independent board member, I have to always act in the, you know, in the best interest of the company. This is an expression that's very important in our corporate law. It is quoted many times in our corporate law, and I would highlight the Article 54 of the duties and responsibilities of manager section. This is leaves you with no doubt about always giving priority to the best interest of the company. Maybe you know, as shareholder, Peter can add something to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Isabella.
I'd be happy to add a couple of very quick thoughts on that. The first is that the AGM on the 20th of April for the director elections is very much a distinct event from the EGM for the transition to the new shareholder structure on June the 11th. I think the connection between the two events is that if indeed the company does succeed in its aim of becoming a broadly held company, then the presence of independent directors is even more important. But it's important in any case. But we do see the two as distinct events and think it's important that they don't become conflated into just one issue. And in particular, I think it's important that directors don't approach the board, the new directors that get elected, don't approach the board with an agenda, if you like, representing a particular point of view, representing a particular shareholder. Once they are elected, if indeed they are elected, Sandra and Isabella's opinions about the transaction, about the conversion ratio of different share classes, is completely their own business and none of Aberdeen's concern, and vice versa. And I think that is very important. It may well be the case that they have a different view about the exact terms of the transaction, and that is indeed how it should be.
Okay, thank you, Peter. Sandra, do you have any closing thoughts?
Yep. Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Well, what I would like to discuss in this final portion of our talk is that the journey to better governance is not a ticking boxes exercise, and this is for sure. So this idea of moving towards Novo Mercado, it will require from the company a different approach in regards to governance. And this is not about only changing internal regulations, bylaws, and all the governance documents. This is, of course, part of the exercise, but much more important is to establish a discussion in the company, a deep discussion, a deep conversation on what represents to become a dispersed ownership company, because this requires a totally different approach of the management and board towards all the stakeholders of the company. So when you are a controlled company, as Vale is today, of course you have the controlling owners and you have a big ear, let's say, to this controlling owners, although of course the company listens to their minority shareholders. But you know, in the way to the dispersed ownership, the company has to develop skills and willingness to better listen and to better understand the needs of all shareholders and all stakeholders. So, and this is not from changing bylaws, internal regulations that this happens. It requires that management and board together dedicate the time to discuss, to understand all the implications in becoming this dispersed ownership company. And that's, I believe, I'm very excited to contribute, because it's from the discussion, from contrasting points of view, that you start changing culture in the company. It takes time, but it's very important that this is, the approach is not a ticking boxes exercise, but a deep discussion on what represents good governance in a company with dispersed ownership. And it's a job that board and management has to do together. So it's very important, this alignment of vision between board and management. And that, I believe, I can contribute to the company.
Okay, thank you, Sandra.
And Andrew, I'd like to clarify just a thing, is Marcelo speaking.
Absolutely.
About what Peter said. I think we are in the same way. We have the same position. The board member cannot have an agenda. We include already talked about this in Aberdeen. I talked with Thiago and I talked with, I don't remember the other guy, but we talked about exactly about this agenda, and I have the same position.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
Now, the only thing that I would like to mention, Andrew, that I appreciate very much the opportunity that Glenn Lewis offered to us, because this helps the shareholders to take informed decisions. So I think this is pretty much important. So I appreciate very much this opportunity.
Thank you very much. We're happy to have you. Well, if there are no other urgent requests for a clarification, I just want to cover a little bit of the voting logistics, because this is something that has certainly been difficult for many shareholders, particularly foreign institutional shareholders who don't plan to attend the meeting in person. So I would really like to hear from both funds in particular on what their experience was trying to get their nominees included in the ballot, and whether they had any tips for shareholders who are not planning to be physically present at the meeting. So, Peter, could I ask you if you have any words on that subject?
I do. I will try to give you a simple and clear explanation of two things that are unfortunately somewhat complicated. And these are two separate complications. The first complication is that this year in Brazil, the regulator, the CVM, introduced something called a Boletim de Voto, the vote bulletin. And this set a 45-day deadline for nominating directors and having those directors be on the vote bulletin. Neither set of candidates was nominated in time for this 45-day deadline. So both sets of candidates have been nominated and have been recognized as candidates for the board elections by Vale, but neither of them appears on this vote bulletin. What we are currently endeavoring to do is to convince all the parties involved to make sure that the names do appear on the local proxy form and on the, and crucially, on the ADR proxy form. Typically, the local proxy form will simply copy the vote bulletin, but we are optimistic that the local lawyers who write the local proxy form will indeed put the names on the local proxy form, which will make it much, much easier for local investors. Separately, and very importantly, there is the issue of the ADRs. And it's very important that we have the names on the ADR proxy form as well. So as I say, we are optimistic. We are working on that. However, and this is a big however, if we are not successful in that effort to get the names on the proxy forms, yes, everybody can still vote for them, but it does become, I'm sorry to say, a lot more complicated. You have to send in something called a special instruction through your custodian, and then that custodian sends in a manual vote that specifies the special instruction you sent to them. That in itself is a subject unto itself, but really just to flag that. I hope we don't come to that. Yes, and sorry I'm going on, but on the second complication, just in brief terms, to outline how the vote will work, there are two seats available on the board, one for preferred shares and one for ordinary shares, or more specifically, minority preferred shareholders and minority ordinary shareholders. If only it was as simple as that. Unfortunately, there is a quorum requirement for both elections. And for the minority ordinary shareholders election of a director, that quorum is set quite high. The threshold that you have to meet of shareholders that actually vote is relatively high, and in history, that quorum has not been met. So if history repeats itself this year, what would happen is that the ordinary shareholders would not, in fact, be able to elect a candidate, and instead there would be an election for effectively for the preferred shareholder candidate, with the ordinary shareholder candidate becoming an alternate director to that director. Having said that, this is of course a contested election for the first time, at least the first time in modern history, if not forever. And so perhaps we will get a higher vote turnout, and perhaps we will indeed have two board seats, which I'm sure would be good news for everybody.
Great. Thank you, Peter. Indeed, it is complicated, and we hope for some of the same outcomes in terms of the proxy form. So I'd like to ask Carlos or Marcelo if you have any other comments on what it was like to have the names included on the proxy form, and if you have any other tips for shareholders.
Okay, it's Marcelo speaking. As a lawyer, and I act very closely to the shareholders' procedures and with the companies. I have been in discussions with Vale since February 2017, shortly after defining the candidature with the main resident and non-resident shareholders. I think we would not have two compelling plates, but possibly a plate with two starters, and probably, or maybe, I would probably be the one. This work, or better, no minority has been included in the distance voting ballot, as it has not been included in the proxy card of the American deposit receipts. And it would not be good for anyone, company, shareholders, who sponsor nominations, and shareholders who would like but will not to be able to vote in their candidates because they are not on the ballot paper. It is the nature of the non-controlling shareholder to wish to have the right to the right of option. The vote of confidence in the controlling shareholders already gives when it acquires shares from the company. This will be a classic case of the so-called a play or explain approach, where companies what do not disclose minority shareholder statements will the same manner as disclosure controller indications will have to explain why. Geração Futuro LPAR firmly believe that all non-controlling shareholders of Vale, minority common shareholders and preferred common shareholders, should unite in favor of a single slate, since the election of more than one independent member at the ordinary general meeting of 2017 will fundamentally depend on the ordinary minority shareholders, immediately required the adoption of the multiple voting process, which may require the adhesion of other ordinary minority shareholders up to 48 hours before the meeting.
So thank you, Marcelo. Just to clarify, you're suggesting that it would be better for shareholders to have the option to vote multiple voting, so cumulative voting, and you're suggesting that they would unite behind one single candidate?
Two single candidates,
okay.
One by preferred shareholders, one by common shareholders.
Thank you.
We have two seats. We have two seats for minority shareholders by law, but it's easiest to have a seat if you use the multiple voting system.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification. Just to check.
Andrew?
Yes?
I just like to add a short note. As the writer of Brazil's stewardship code, I have to strongly encourage shareholders to attend and vote either in person or to a very well-instructed and empowered proxy. Expressly quoting Principle 5 of the code, institutional investors should be active and diligent in the exercise of voting rights. Diligent stewardship practice culminate in the conscious exercise of voting rights. So I very much encourage shareholders to engage and vote.
Thank you, Isabella, for pointing us in the right direction and for the Brazilian Stewardship Code. Bruno?
Yeah, just one small comment. I believe last year Vale also indicated and detailed in its voting manual the various options to cast a vote. So hopefully this year there will be such manual as well available to investors. As Peter mentioned, I think one of the key points also will be for ADR holders to cast their vote and to make sure that they have all the right documentation in place and the right papers and so on and so forth to ensure that the votes are valid, counted for, and received by the company. So that's one particularly important point. But also, I think on the positive, a few years ago when I was at Hermes and working actually with Aberdeen on proposing independent minority representation to the board of Petrobras, at the time we were very much fighting an uphill battle. This legislation was even more confusing than it was than it was now, and it was quite difficult to even get the company to disclose the name of the proposed candidate in its meeting notice. However, I think now we've seen some very clear progress and clear improvement, both in terms of best practice of the structure code as well as improvements within regulation and legislation itself, but also I think in terms of how companies are receiving such nominations and the fact that while the names are not currently disclosed in the bulletin you vote to, the company has disclosed the names of the candidates as well as the various documentation publicly. So I think that that's already a significant step forward and a step in the right direction, which ought to be encouraged. And again, like having a contested election might not be the ideal scenario. And I fully agree with. However, it only means one thing is that investors are getting more involved in Brazil, minority investors are getting more engaged, and I think that's very much a really good thing, and I hope that in the coming years we're going to see more and more of such activity coming from minority investors, both local and international, and with collaboration between both. I think things are definitely moving in the right direction, at least at the market level, and that's something that we definitely see this year.
Indeed, we've seen a lot of developments in the corporate governance sphere in Brazil this year, and things do seem to be moving in the right direction. We've covered a lot of ground today, and I want to thank you, Marcelo, Bruno, Carlos, Sandra, Isabella and Peter for your participation. We look forward to seeing the outcome of the meeting and to continuing to engage in dialogue on moving governance reform forward in Brazil. Just as a reminder that this recording will be made available on the Glass Lewis website. And if any listeners have any questions, to please email proxytalk@glasslewis.com. If we receive any questions that to forward on to the candidates, we'll do that and put you in touch directly. So again, thank you for your time. We really appreciate your participation in the call, and we look forward to speaking again soon. I'm here today with Mauro Rodriguez da Cunha from AMEC, who will give us a little bit more background on the situation at Val and voting on board elections in Brazil in general. So Mauro, can I let you introduce yourself briefly?
Okay, thank you, and hello to all clients of Glass Lewis. AMEC is an association of institutional investors in Brazil. It is now 10 years old. We represent about 60 institutional investors, including local independents, local financial institutions, pension funds, and global investors like BlackRock, Aberdeen, T. Rowe Price, and many others. Our members have an estimated AUM in Brazilian equities about $150 billion U.S. dollars, which make that membership quite representative of the market in Brazil. It includes activists and non-activists, but in any degree, institutions that are worried about the evolution of the Brazilian market. We have a broad agenda that touches issues in terms of corporate governance, regulation, and treatment of shareholder rights in general. So it's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Well, thank you very much for that introduction, Mauro, and we're very happy to have you. Today we're talking about Val specifically, and I wondered if you could tell us what is AMEC's opinion about the upcoming election.
Okay, well, AMEC doesn't have an opinion about specific candidates. This is something we do not do, even though some organizations similar to ours in other jurisdictions do get involved in forming slates and electing directors. AMEC has done it only once in its past, and it was the engagement with Petrobras that started in 2011. And many of you are probably familiar with that. Other than this, AMEC is worried that the process works, that shareholders are fairly treated, and that elections are not biased in one way or another, or influenced by decisions of management or controlling shareholders. So we work with the regulators to ensure that the process is fair according to the way the law is established. What we're seeing in Vale today is something very interesting and rather new, which is seeing more than one slate competing for seats that are dedicated to minority shareholders by law. And this is a reflex, in my opinion, of a broader movement towards better stewardship in Brazil. These are rights that have been in our legislation since 1976. In many situations, exerting these rights was very complicated and very expensive, both for foreign investors and for local ones. Since 2011, it is not a coincidence that it is the same time frame of the Petrobras engagement, there's been a virtual revolution in proxy access in Brazil. By force of the official letter that the CVM issues every year, starting 2013, any investor can nominate a candidate to the board, and the company needs to acknowledge that by means of a notice to the market. This notice is essential for this news to be captured by proxy advisors and for the whole proxy voting chain that reaches the desks of investors. This process has been furthered by formal regulation, and namely, we're talking about CVM Instruction 561 that introduced distance voting in Brazil. This is somewhat similar to the proxy voting system that we know from more central markets with Brazilian characteristics. It was a very smart structure developed by the CVM in partnership with market players that at the end of the day will allow fund managers to vote from their desks as they do globally. The system takes advantage of the existing infrastructure that is in place in Brazil and fairly integrated to process corporate events like dividends, rights issues, and so forth. So the votes should move back and forth relatively seamless. This year, all the companies in the IBX index, which are roughly 100 in number, they must provide the alternative for investors to use this distance voting. Now, there are, of course, pains in the beginning. Many companies or service providers still do not know how to make it happen. And what we've been seeing is that in many cases, these voting bulletins, as the proxy card is called here, are reaching fund managers very late, if at all, and only in physical formats. So it is our view that the process will become more automated in years to come, but implementing the process this year has been quite complicated. So the big change really affects local investors, but it is also affecting global investors, since most ADR custodians are now looking at the voting bulletin and using this as the framework to build their own proxy voting cards. Now, this has consequences. Some are good and some are bad. The good ones, I'd say, is standardization. So companies will have voting cards that are similar from both local and foreign investors. On the other hand, some of the deadlines that were easier to meet for the communication to reach global investors will now be somewhat refrained. So investors nominating candidates now need to prove that they own at least half a percentage of the company, and before and to issue the notice to the market, this requirement doesn't exist, and that requirement needs to reach the company 10 days before the meeting is actually called. It doesn't mean that one cannot nominate and vote for candidates in the meeting itself. It only means that these are the requirements so that the names are included in the voting bulletin and by consequence into the voting cards that foreigners are exposed to. So because of all this, again, firms are learning, investors are learning, and it is already clear that nominating candidates is much easier now. And I believe that we're going to see much more often situations in which investors will have the opportunity to choose among different candidates, either representing minorities or simply independent candidates nominated by minorities to join boards. Over the long term, we hope that this will be a catalyst for better stewardship among local investors and for better engagement policies at the companies. We need to see more transparency on board evaluations, on high-level discussions between companies and investors about corporate governance and their board structure. But this will be a long road. We're just in the beginning of it. So this is quite a long answer to a short question, Andrew, but I believe that what's going on in the Vale election and is going on also in other companies, such as the Conselho Fiscal of Petrobras, is a sign of times to come. In Brazilian companies, we will see situations with multiple candidates, and investors and their advisors must make an opinion and choose the best one of them for the company and for the specific needs that they have at that time.
Thank you very much. Indeed, a long answer, but a complicated situation. So I'm very happy to get your opinion. And just one thing that you said that I wanted to pick up on, Mauro, is there any advice that you would provide to shareholders who are voting this year in Vale or any other meetings on the elections of directors to make sure that their votes get to the right candidate? You mentioned that they might be getting physical proxy forms. Do you have any advice on whether shareholders should consider sending physical proxies or other ways of making sure their votes go how they want?
I think the physical proxy is a problem for the locals mostly. Global investors will use their existing framework. It is important, though, that voting structures become more flexible and take into account news that happen outside of the voting bulletin. So there is absolutely no real need for the proxy cards issued by any service provider abroad, including voting systems, including ADR custodians, to be restricted to the Brazilian voting bulletin. So in theory, if there is a nomination that takes place, let's say 30 or 20 days prior to the meeting, if there's time to process this into voting cards and research reports, it is important that this information reaches investors. And if there are fields in the voting cards for special instructions, these pieces of information need to be taken into account. So have in mind that the actual candidates that can receive your votes are those in the local voting bulletin that should be reflected in the global proxy cards, but there may be others, and there may be better candidates. And if you have flexibility to analyze and vote for these better candidates, you may be helping your invested companies more. If I'm allowed, Andrew, to make a tiny commercial, AMEC is a resource on the ground for investors, especially members, of course, but non-members, if there are specific doubts or problems on these processes. Our new regulation didn't go far enough as to build a reliable system of voting confirmation. This is something that is still on AMEC's agenda to interact with regulators. And we also have the intention of capturing all the problems that we see in this voting season to relay it back to the regulator in the month of May. We are organizing a workshop in Brazil in May that will discuss all these problems, and these will be translated into suggestions to improve this regulation. Again, it is a new system. It is revolutionary in relation to practices in Brazil up until now, in which basically you had to actually get a lawyer into a plane and into the meeting. And so it is natural that adjustments need to be made.
Thank you very much, and we definitely look forward to the outcome of that in May, as you suggested just now. But I guess we'll come back to that at a later date. So for now, let's focus a little bit more on Val. This is going to be obviously an important meeting for shareholders in Val, and partially looking forward to the restructuring and the proposed listing on Novo Mercado. So I wondered if you could share a little bit of your opinion on why that is important.
Well, I believe it is very important that we're going to have really independent directors nominated by non-controlling shareholders and with no links to controlling shareholders in this period in which Vale is proposing a major change in its corporate structure. So it is a happy coincidence of facts. As you may know, AMEC has taken a very deep look into the proposed restructuring, given the clout of Vale, given how long people have been considering what was going to happen to that structure, given that the company is today controlled by financial investors who, by definition, need an exit at some point. And also by news that have been plaguing the company about political interference, be they true or false, they do impact investors' view about the company and consequently stock price. So I'm not going to get into the details of the proposed restructuring. You probably have access to the Vale materials, but they're basically proposing to incorporate the control vehicle into the company at a premium, convert PN non-voting shares into ON voting shares. I should say PN restricted shares voting, because PNs have the rights to vote in Vale as opposed to other Brazilian companies in all matters excepting board elections. So they're proposing to convert PNs into ONs at a discount, and then if all goes according to plan, to migrate to the Novo Mercado. AMEC sees transactions like these as dangerous situations because given the convoluted legal system we have in Brazil, they have been opportunities to shift value from minority to controlling shareholders. And even the news of migrating to the Novo Mercado which might get investors excited at first sight, can in fact hide some very outrageous movements, as we've seen in the case of Oi in the past. So we have the habit of looking at these transactions every time that happens to make sure that investors are being respected. In the case of Vale, we had a very strong consensus among our membership that the transaction was very well structured in terms of fairness. So there are some aspects to the transaction that we don't see every day that makes this transaction particularly interesting and eventually even a benchmark for future ones in the past. Now, I'm going probably to say this more than once, AMEC has no opinion about the embedded price in this transaction, the discounts that PN holders are accepting to be converted into ONs and the premium they are granting to the controlling shareholders. This is up to shareholders to decide and vote in a meeting that, if I'm not mistaken, is called for May 14th. But our main worry is that investors are able to take that decision without a sword over their heads. And our conclusion is that, yes, they can. Vale has made it clear that the issue is going to be brought to a shareholder meeting in which ONs and PNs will vote, and the controlling shareholders will not. This is, in theory, this is something that should be straightforward, but we've seen cases in the past in Brazil where the controlling shareholder has voted, even while being wildly conflicted. The other thing is that investors understand that the ratios between ONs and PNs have been much worse for PNs in the past. So this removes the possibility that the transaction was opportunistic in any way. Again, we've seen some cases in which transactions are proposed at the worst possible time for investors. And finally, there at least so far in this phase of the transaction, there's no mandatory conversion. This is a voluntary process. So shareholders can freely choose to vote for the conversion and then eventually convert or not convert. It's up to them. And the result will depend on all that. Also, we believe that the new shareholders agreement has some characteristics that, if not ideal, are at least an improvement over the past. As you know, today, the board of Vale is not really relevant. All decisions are taken in prior meetings of the controlling shareholders, which bind the votes of directors. So they reach the boardroom with their votes ready. So not only is the decision already taken, but there's not even a debate, even if you have a question in independent director. That structure will remain in place for certain items in a much more restricted version than what we have today. And eventually, if the transaction goes through all the way as they intend, this feature will be removed. So these are all very important advances in corporate governance that have led our members to the conclusion that AMEC needed to issue this press release, focusing again on the structure of the transaction and not the price. So I believe that this is more or less the gist of our statement, unless there are any other questions on it.
I think that covers us for now, but we will pass on any questions that we get on your behalf directly to you, Mauro, and we really thank you for your commentary. It's great to hear your perspective, and as I said, we look forward to coming back in later this year after you have those meetings in May and perhaps throughout the year to see what we can look forward to next year.
Excellent. Thank you for your time, and we're always available. Thank you.
Thank you.